It's Turi Ryder on 720 WGN.
I sort of like to talk about Father's Day a little bit ahead of Father's Day, because if I leave it to the last minute, y'all are going to end up making an ashtray, aren't you? But what really is interesting about Father's Day and caught my attention when I saw a little review of this book was that the role of father is still kind of stuck where it was in, I would say, the 70s maybe. And I mean specifically in terms of the stay-at-home dad. If you are a stay-at-home dad or ever were a stay-at-home dad, you may particularly appreciate the gentleman you are about to meet. He is a stay-at-home dad. He's also a cartoonist for The New Yorker. And he is the author of Captain Dad, The Manly Art of Stay-at-Home Parenting. His theory is that it's a macho thing to be at home with the kids. Mr. Burns, welcome. You're on 720 WGN.
Hello. Thank you.
I'm so glad you could do this. And I loved some of the excerpts that I've read from your book. And let me just say that my spouse has been a stay-at-home dad at different times with the kids, okay, with a home office and all of that. And it is not the same in a lot of ways. What's different between being a stay-at-home father and being a stay-at-home mother?
Being a stay-at-home mother is a time-honored profession. Being a stay-at-home dad is still a little bit on the weirdish side, but not quite as weird as it was 8.5 years ago when I started it, and I would be the only guy on the playground except for, like, the ice cream guy and the guy that everybody's checking out on their phones if he's on a offender list.
Which frequently he is. I have a friend in West Rogers Park who used to take his three children to the park. He was a stay-at-home dad at the time. And I remember he said to me, he's British, and he said, "It's a good thing we all have this color hair. They would have thought I was some kind of stalker." I had strawberry blonde hair, and all his kids had strawberry blonde hair. And it was the only thing that kept them from calling the police if he, you know, picked up his daughter and held her on his lap.
Well, you know, there are evolutionary studies about how important it is for a father to look like his children, and so there's a case in point. Yes, it's good to look like your kids.
Yeah, I think it helps. And with mothers, not so much. You know, they don't expect it. They just figure.
Well, you see mothers, you see nannies, grandmothers. It's a woman with kids, and everyone just accepts that. With a guy, that they do want to check your ID, yeah, but. You know, guys adapt, and we just roll with it, and you know, you got to shrug it off and laugh it off, and that's laughing it off is a big part of the book.
What were some of the most egregious things that people said and did about you as a stay at home dad that humor really helped you not kill yourself about?
Well, it's not so much about not killing myself as it's about not killing others.
Fair enough.
I was walking my daughter, who was just a few months old, and we had been walking for about 20 minutes. We hadn't passed anybody for about 10 minutes, and then we walk by somebody on a side street, and that person overhears my daughter hiccup. Suddenly, this woman launches into me about all the things I'm doing wrong in feeding my daughter. Oh, you shouldn't give her dairy, and she hiccuped in the womb, for Pete's sake.
Was this Berkeley or Chicago?
This is Chicago. It can happen anywhere. Believe me, it's the one thing that I've actually found about writing about this is that my experiences as a stay-at-home dad are almost exactly, in most instances, the experiences of stay-at-home moms.
True. I had a woman offer to breastfeed my child once in a market.
That's weird.
It was very weird. But again, you know, this is the left coast here. I'll be back in Chicago in 3 weeks and counting. But it was odd. And then the other thing that was really weird is now you might not have gotten this, but maybe you did. When you have a kid and you're at home, what you feed the kid, people will come right up to you and they'll say, "Is that breast milk? Is that formula? What's in that bottle?" Did people come up and say that to you?
Not as much, but because as a mother, there's more pressure for you to be the one feeding your child breast milk. And I don't have any, actually.
Yes, but that's not, that doesn't stop them from wanting to. I mean, they will sit you down. They'll say, now, is your wife pumping? Now, is she? I mean, they really, they will ask you these things. No?
Well, it didn't help that one of the places I would go to lunch was a place that was where the La Leche women would meet regularly.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I know. Fortunately, one of them was somebody I happened to know, so she protected me and from, you know,
she threw her breasts in front of you, and you were safe.
I can't comment on that.
All right, no, I can say that though. Would you like to hear my La Leche League story? I will tell you if you are interested.
I'd love to hear it.
Okay, so before I had my first kid, La Leche League, for those who do not know, La Leche League is back in the 50s when women were being forcibly removed from the nursing position, and they were being told that
natural
Similac was the best thing for babies, that formula was the best thing for babies. You should not, this was what the ad industry was saying to women, and a lot of women quit nursing because they were told that formula was better for their babies. So the La Leche League showed up to say, no, if you can, they started out very modestly. They weren't all full of themselves just at first. This is better for the baby. If you can do it, you should do it. And so women got some support for a decision to nurse that was not being supported at that time by commerce and industry. Okay, fast forward several decades. Now it's two generations later, and I'm having a kid, and I thought, well, what do I know about breastfeeding? I'll go to a meeting of the La Leche League. They will help me. Because, by the way, the cruelest joke against every woman who ever wants to breastfeed are those beautiful pictures in every church and museum of the Madonna peacefully nursing. That's a racket and a lie. It is the hardest
work. Don't bag them for eyes.
No.
Paint it out.
It's like trying to put a marshmallow through the eye of a needle. You can't, just can't do it. You got this bobbly little, it's just terrible. So, okay. And it takes 6 months before the kid can really cooperate and help you out, which doesn't keep you from looking down at the darling and saying, oh, come on, help mommy out. So there you are with, I go to the La Leche League before I'm pregnant out to here, and I'm listening, and it's kind of, you know, it seems kind of normal. Then this woman shows up. She's got a beautiful daughter who is reading a book in Italian, but speaking to her mother in English. She speaks two languages, this little girl, maybe six, clearly precocious. She's speaking English, she's reading Italian, she's reading something in English and speaking Italian. And it comes around the mother's time to speak, and she says, I'm so desperate for help. I don't know what to do. My daughter, this beautiful girl right here, is waking us up every night at 3 a.m., pounding on the bedroom door, demanding to be nursed.
Oh, dear.
And I look at the woman, and I look at the girl, and I say, not so quietly, your daughter speaks two languages. Pick one. Say no. And I got up, and I left the La Leche League, and that was the end of it. But seriously, they really are a little bit, you know, God forbid, they should, I'm nursing my 12-year-old. When do I stop? So
11 years ago.
Yeah. Right. I guess it's like the only actual living case of perpetual motion that I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's people are extreme though in parenting. Extreme parenting is the norm and these days, and it's confusing. I mean, whatever book you read on parenting, it will give you the same message. You're doing it wrong. I try to soften that by saying, yeah, you're doing it wrong, but so what? Everyone else is. Relax. Just go.
Yeah, that's what therapy is for. If we weren't doing it wrong, it would put all those therapists right out of business.
And they're the ones writing the books, so, hey.
That's right.
If you want, then start getting your kid now in the psychological studies, because they're going to cash out. Big.
Right. Well, we have, you know, dollar for the college fund, dollar for the therapy fund, dollar for the college fund. So when you wrote this book,
psychology major, it's all the same money, and it pays itself off.
Yes. So that you were at home with two kids at this point. Now you have two kids at home,
yeah.
And at some point, I'm assuming you kept on working because you're an artist and commentator. But at some point, it must have become clear to people you work with that you are accompanied by small children and your work schedule is changing somewhat. How did that go down?
Well, for the most part, I work in isolation, And so not many people see that. But, you know, they'll see, like, the diminished output. I tried to hang on to my most visible outlets, like the New Yorker, for example. Because that says, hey, I'm still alive. And you know, the other places, not as many people, you know, notice. And so maybe, you know, I can get away for a few years without people realizing that I've faded out of the scene. But, you know, yeah, my work hours, at first it seemed like, okay, well, you know, kids sleep a lot. And I would work long hours, and I have my baby in a sling over, you know, over my shoulder, and she would only sleep if she was sucking on my finger. So I managed to make it so that she was always sucking on my left index finger. And I would work.
I'm assuming you're right-handed. Napping. Otherwise, yeah. This would have really been difficult.
Yeah. I've gotten farther.
Yes.
Wouldn't have been very smart.
No. Would have been a dramatic change in the look of your art.
But, you know, with sleep deprivation in those early months, who would know? But I would work for hours like that, and I would get a lot done. But as she was awake more, my work output, my hours dropped. And then when a second child came along, oh, it was... That was doubly hard.
Yeah, well, exponentially, I would say.
Yes.
If you could hold on for a moment, I would like to ask you about the different ways that you and your spouse get treated for doing the same kind of parenting tasks, if you know what I'm asking.
Okay.
All right. Like, just for example, like, you're working, the baby cries, everybody's thrilled. Your spouse is working at home, the baby cries, she's on the phone on a business call, and she freaks out, and I'm sure you know why. So can you hold on and speak a little bit about that double standard of about getting...
I got nowhere to go.
Yeah, well, hold on. I'm glad to hear that.
Is
there anybody sucking on your index finger right now?
No, just me.
Okay, so you can move about the building. That's good to know. Hold on. This is Pat Burns. He's talking about his new book, Captain Dad, The Manly Art of Stay-at-Home Parenting. It's our pre-Father's Day edition. Why? Because I said so. On 720 WGN.
You're listening to Turi Ryder on 720 WGN. You're listening to Turi Ryder on 720 WGN.